the real problem for like the Rubios and the Vances of the world is, you know, they were out there so hard against Trump. And then as soon as power sort of presented itself to them, they like flip right around and like, okay, sure. Yeah. Oh, but I, you know, yeah, I think you're a Nazi, but if I could be vice president, maybe you're okay. So I think that that kind of stuff is going to be, that's going to be tough for them to run against. That's going to be hopefully hung. Well, I think we, the Democrats certainly will hang it around them, but the other Republican hopefuls will hang it around their heads as well.
Hey, Matt, last week we saw Gavin Newsom head to Davos. Davos, as we all know, is the big World Economic Forum where all the rich and hoity-toity politicians and billionaires get together and talk about the future of the world. We saw Gavin Newsom go to Davos right before Donald Trump. What do you think about that trip?
Well, I think it's kind of a continuation of kind of Gavin's playbook to put himself up on the same level as other world leaders. And I think part of the reason that he is so far ahead, if you look at kind of prediction models or prediction markets or any kind of polling that's out there right now, I mean, Gavin's like kind of, you know, between 20% and 30% on some of these things. And, you know, it's so early, but it's because he's been the most successful of getting himself out there. I mean, he's really been all over the place over the last year.
He has been. And for people who don't know, Matt is like the king of prediction models. like whatever, very early in the betting on, you know, politics, what outcomes are going to come. Not that he personally bet, but you know, the online stuff.
He's following yes. No, stuff. I've never personally bet. No, that's,
never placed a wager, Butler. That's what we call him around there.
I was in pretty early on kind of trade and some of those other things. And I will say that the outcome of the two Trump elections were not financially good for me from a prediction market standpoint. So I'm certainly no expert, but I do think that prediction markets are incredibly helpful to know what people are thinking out there, because it's not just somebody but like, God, I really think Gavin Newsom is going to be a great Democratic nominee, and just kind of saying it over a beer in a bar. I mean, these are people that are actually putting money behind their opinions. So there is some reality to what people are saying there.
All right. So Gavin Newsom went to Davos. One of the things he was really remarked on for talking about was he challenged European leaders to stand tall. This is the time to stand tall. We can't take this complicity out of these European leaders. We need for them to stand tall. I should have brought knee pads. I think that the quote.
Yeah, I think he was saying he was selling knee pads
for the world leaders.
Yeah, he's selling. Well, I think he's selling knee pads for corporate CEOs who've been bowing down to Donald Trump. I mean, and he said that they're sold out on his website. I mean, this is. Look,
have you seen these things? I saw the picture of them. They're like they're red. They're red. They're like huge. They look almost like boxing pads, right? They're huge. And then they have the Donald Trump like squiggly line signature
in white, okay.
Across the top of them. It's pretty amazing.
Listen, I really don't want to mess up my kind of like search algorithm by kind of doing a search like that. So I've not seen them in person. But, you know, look, I think this is where Gavin has been incredibly good. And the reason that he's kind of out in front right now is because he has been the Democratic leader that has taken on Donald Trump, the best. He's been in his face. You know, he's got a great social media program. People were all up in arms about his tweeting out in all caps and stuff like that. But it's just, you know, it's mocking Donald Trump. And it's been great. And that's what people are looking for. People are looking for somebody to take this guy on. So he's been doing a really good job.
The other quote from that press conference, which was really epic, if you haven't watched it, you should watch it. It starts off with him, I think, greeting a U.S. senator in like this really kind of basic way. It's funny. But the part at the end where he says, Donald Trump is a T-Rex. You either mate with him or he devours you. Gavin, I will say this. Gavin Newsom is the king of the quotes, and he's always ready for the next tweet.
He really is. He's very good at mixing it up. He's got a way of just kind of coming rapid fire at a questioner with statistics, especially about how California is the greatest state in the nation, if not the greatest country on the planet, and will be able to like push back on all kinds of stuff. So he's going to be he'd actually be pretty good in a kind of a debate setting with J.D. Vance. But I don't know if that kind of messaging is going to be off-putting for voters who are just sort of listening to this guy. He just he's very polished. He really I mean, have we had anyone who has looked more central casting like a United States president? Kind of in contention than Gavin Newsom. I don't know.
But you know who does not seem to be sold on the Gavin Newsom boomlet is David Axelrod, who we all remember. David Axelrod was Barack Obama's chief strategist in 2008 and 2012. And David Axelrod said that that authenticity will matter, but also humility, I think was the quote. And I guess he's sort of taking after Gavin Newsom's, you know, arrogance or his, you know, his, he's the main character energy.
Yeah. I mean, look, when you have a podcast that is called This Is Gavin Newsom and it's your podcast, I mean, this is, we're not dealing with a particularly humble guy. That may be okay though. Cause I mean, like, let's look at who's sitting in the White House. You know, we may just be in the era of needing outsized egos and outsized characters. And then, you know, let's look at kind of where his values are, kind of what his policies are going to be. And hopefully he is, you know, if he's not a humble guy, at least he's going to have his policy in the right place. And we may just need to fight fire with fire.
Now, I can't tell you where I was or who I was listening to, but there was a potential 2028 candidate in one of these off the record briefings the other day, or on background. I don't know, whatever it was, but some conversation that I had a big group, and he wasn't talking to me specifically, but he was talking to a room, and I heard him say the question is whether or not America would be looking for a child or an adult. In the next presidential campaign, like maybe the answer to Donald Trump won't be someone else with Trump's childlike Twitter fingers, or they'll be looking for someone who's going to be the adult in the room. I don't know if that's true or not. I really don't know. Maybe they'll be looking for a teenager or a 22-year-old, right? Like not quite your grandpa, but also not not so juvenile. But they do want somebody who's adept, kind of like the Mondami. Like, not him himself, but the Mondami kind of figure of maturity, but also aggressiveness.
Yeah, I think so. I think somebody who is, you know, in their late 30s, early 40s. I mean, we've actually done quite well when we've nominated these sort of kind of, you know, younger side of adults, though. But you know, there's a bunch of space.
You got to be over 40. Teenager. Remember that. You got to be over 40 for the Constitution.
35, I think. Right. Well.
You might be right. Here's actually, you have to be over 35. I stand corrected.
Listen, con law was a long time ago for me, but you know, it's. But I did get a great education in the state of California from per Gavin Newsom's state. You got to be, you know, in any case, I think looking at somebody under 50 is probably going to be a great idea for us, or maybe, you know, maybe in their early 50s. You know, I still feel pretty young, so hopefully we can find somebody in there. But yeah, definitely the kind of the 70 plus is out. But I think I don't imagine Americans are so sick of having a child, though, right? Like, this is, nobody wants anything similar to Donald Trump. Yeah.
If my history is right, Bill Clinton was 46 when he ran for president. I think Barack Obama was around the same age when he ran for president. A little bit older, maybe 48, I think, when he first got elected. And then Jimmy Carter, I think he was like the oldest Democrat like since like LBJ, I think was like 52 or something like that. So we really do have younger Democrats. And then what's crazy
and starting
is like
with Kennedy.
LBJ looks like he's 100.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. But he really wasn't that old. He just looked old, like a lot of cigarettes and
it was a different time.
It was a different time. It's like looking back at our parents, you know, like the pictures of our parents or grandparents for sure, pictures of our grandparents like in the 60s or something. And all those people look like they're ancient, but they're like our age. it's kind of amazing. All right. So that was Gavin Newsom. He had a great time in Davos. He also did not get let into the USA House, which Sean Hannity was giving him a lot of shit about for not getting let in the USA House. And he complained about that. Last time I checked, California was in the USA, I think was his quote online. So he had kind of a he had a big week in Davos. And then Trump, this is the last point I have on this. Trump teased him for spending time in Europe. He should have been in California as Trump was about to be headed to Europe to go to Davos. He teased Gavin for being there, which I thought was dumb.
Yeah, I mean, look, let's remember, there's only three world leaders that run an economy bigger than Gavin Newsom. So, you know, he's actually got a space there. I mean, it's really good to show his credentials kind of on a world stage. So I think it was really good for him. The only other Democratic nominee that was there, I think, was Andy Beshear from Kentucky. But, you know, obviously did not make a ton of news. And, this is we're in this situation where Gavin Newsom is making news, and as the more you make news, the more you continue to make news, and so he's been able to stay there, kind of in the focus of the media, and so he's done a good job, and that's sort of why he's in first place right now. If there is an actual horse race at this point, this early, but a long way to go.
Matt, what we have not talked about on our podcast yet, we have not talked about the Republicans, and obviously, it's a big week in the country. We should just acknowledge the country's been through a lot. What's going on in Minnesota? People are protesting. God love you. Stay out there. We've seen two tragic deaths, shootings in Minnesota. This is really animating the country and focusing people. But my question before we talk about the actual substance of Minnesota is about the Republicans and how they're managing it. We've really got two very different stances. One is J.D. Vance. The other is Marco Rubio. Vance has basically been copying what's been coming out of Homeland Security, Kristi Noem, and the president. And he's talking about, you know, it's a tragedy of their own making. The Democrats have engineered the chaos. This is just media gaslighting. These guys are far left agitators. And then Marco Rubio, he's not really saying very much about it at all.
Yeah, which is interesting. Yeah, I think J.D. Vance has to see his path to the Republican nomination in 2028 straight through Donald Trump and the kind of the opening that Donald Trump has given him as vice president. He's going to want to stay on Trump's good side. He wants to stay in good with all of the administration, with all of, he wants to take all of support that the MAGA world has created, and he just wants to ride in on that. And just, I don't think he's going to mess around with that. He is not going to separate himself from Trump in any way, shape, or form until we are much farther down this road, and maybe until he's secured the nomination. Marco Rubio's got a different path. I mean, it does seem like Trump kind of back in, I don't know, August, September sometime, sort of indicated that it would probably be J.D. Vance that would be able to carry on the mantle. And Marco Rubio, has also indicated that he'd probably support J.D. Vance. But I don't think that that's really true. I think these guys are all going to start right. jockeying for position once we get a couple of months down the road, certainly after the midterms. Once Trump is officially a lame duck, I think things are going to start to change a little bit. And we'll see kind of true colors here. So it's not like Marco Rubio hasn't changed positions before. So.
Look, it's smart of Rubio to go ahead and let J.D. Vance, you know, take the lead. One, Vance is the vice president, and so he's got the most powerful, you know, the biggest platform in the White House. Number two, I think Vance helped bring Rubio into the administration, if the rumors are to be believed. Mm. So he supported Rubio coming in. And then number three, it's just smart because draft behind that guy. Let him stay out front. Let him take some bullets and some blows. Yeah. And then when people get tired of J.D. Vance, guess what? You got this other guy. You can be like Trump light, like me. I'm Trump, but not too Trumpy. Right. Be Marco Rubio.
Yeah, I think he's going to let J.D. Vance go in front, take all of the Democratic criticism, try to stay kind of low profile like a lot of these guys. And also, you know, Trump may, you know, the higher you stick your head up, the more chance that Trump's going to start shooting at you. So yes. he's got it. It's beneficial from both sides. He's also probably running Venezuela right now. So he may be pretty busy. So he's not really kind of looking towards the campaign trail. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
Well, he is the Secretary of State, Rubio, and the National Security Advisor. And I think he's running the Venezuela portfolio, as you said, he's president of Venezuela. And they're trying to figure out what to do in Iran. And they're trying to figure out how to back out of this boondoggle debacle in Greenland. And he's got all these things.
Yeah.
But you said something that I think is really important. Not one little part of me believes that Donald Trump is going to be able to sit quietly in the White House in 2027 and beginning of 2028 while J.D. Vance runs for president and becomes the most popular Republican without losing his shit. He's going to lose his shit and take after J.D. Vance. You can't tell me he won't.
I think you're probably right. And I think, you know, somebody who spent a good amount of time with Trump, Anthony Scaramucci, has been all over social media talking about, you know, Trump is going to try to take the whole party down as soon as he's not the nominee or not the president anymore. Like if he can't be the head of the party, he doesn't want anybody to be the head of the party. He wants them, as he says, you were nothing before I got here. And as soon as I'm gone, you're nothing now. Trump probably wants a Democrat to win in 2028. It'll be really interesting to see what he does, but I don't see him kind of just moving aside for anybody.
That's interesting. You know, if a Democrat wins in 2028, then Trump becomes still the voice, right? He remains the voice of the MAGA movement because there's nobody else out there. And so he can come after the Democrat full throttle, you know, both barrels, and say whatever it is he wants to say about them without worrying about it. But if you've got a Republican president, particularly if it's J.D. Vance, if he's attacking the Republican president, he's going to just look like an asshole.
Yeah. Well, not that he's ever had an issue with that, but no, I think you're exactly right. He definitely keeps his influence more so if there is a Democrat in the White House. I mean, you saw that he never stopped attacking Biden from day one. I mean, he claimed that he didn't lose the election, but then he was after Biden all the way through. Now, will he do that if he is not seeing a run in the future for him? Like, I think from the minute he lost the 2020 election, he was setting up for that next election immediately in 2024. We'll see what that is. And also, I mean, the guy is, you know, in 3 years, he is going to be even older, obviously, than he is now.
Don't forget about this though, Matt. Remember the central organizing thesis of Donald Trump, which is one, ego; two, make money, which is also point number one, right?
Right.
Ego. Yeah. And so if you are the head of the MAGA movement, that's a pretty big customer base. So as much as he and the Trump boys are out here, you know, making money and getting the next grift, as long as they're still the head of this faction of the Republican Party, they can bilk these guys for as much money as they possibly can, even while a Democrat's in office.
That's true. And I guess that brings up the next question, which is, outside of Marco Rubio, J.D. Vance, who else is, do you see as kind of coming down this path? I mean, because people are talking about Don Jr., right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you really want to have the grift continue, you know, keep it all in the family. So I don't know if you think about other people who are considering taking a shot at the Republican nomination.
I'm sure there's some Republican governors out there. What's the Republican governor of Utah's name? The one who did those ads with Wes Moore and
hey, we're coming together. Yeah, those. Yeah. His name is escaping me. Yes, exactly. It's all about civility. Yes. Yeah, there's him. I mean, look, there's Ted Cruz, who's always sort of lurking around this space. You know, I think you did a podcast 2 months ago or so talking about Marjorie Taylor Greene, kind of in her turnaround and what that means. That does seem like that's setting up for a presidential run as well.
I think there's no telling who's waiting in the wings of the Republican Party who wants to come out. Spencer Cox, that's the governor of Utah. I had to figure that out. Yeah, Spencer
Good
Cox.
Good job.
me and Google. Thank you, Google. There's no telling who's waiting in the wings of the Republican Party who wants to come out and play without Donald Trump. The question is, can anybody be, for the Republicans, I guess it's the same question, do we get the same kind of Trump behavior, or are they going to be looking for, you know, somebody who's a little bit more, I don't want to call it moderate, just competent, you know, normal?
Yeah, I think there's probably a case to be made that the only person who can politic like Trump, campaign like Trump, govern like Trump is Donald Trump. Nobody else can pull it off. Mm-hmm. Like there's there is, it's weird, but there's an authenticity to his sort of kind of phoniness and bravado. And, you know, he's not a truth teller or anything like that. You don't trust him, but you believe that when he's talking about something, he believes it, whether it's true or not. Right. You know that Trump is feeling it, and he's not guarded with his words. He's not politically correct. So, you know, that works really well for Donald Trump, but it's the only person that it's worked for so far. I'm not sure that, you know, Ted Cruz can go start just spouting off anything that he wants to say, and it's going to work for him. That's not who Ted Cruz is. So he'll have a little trouble with that. You know, J.D. Vance the same way, Marco Rubio. I mean, the real problem for like the Rubios and the Vances of the world is, you know, they were out there so hard against Trump. And then as soon as power sort of presented itself to them, they like flip right around and like, okay, sure. Yeah. Oh, but I think you're a Nazi, but if I could be vice president, maybe you're okay. So I think that kind of stuff is going to be, that's going to be tough for them to run against. That's going to be hopefully hung. Well, I think the Democrats certainly will hang it around them, but the other Republican hopefuls will hang it around their heads as well. So,
well, and if one of them is not sufficiently loyal, you know who the main person is who will hang it around their necks will be Donald Trump. He'll talk about how they were two-faced and you can't trust them, and they said bad things about me, and then they wanted my power, so they came and said nice things about me. Now look at them criticizing me. Like, you know, his ego will be completely wrapped up in how he evaluates the 2028 Republican field.
Sure.
I don't have any sympathy for those guys.
Yeah, and let's remember how the last vice president under Donald Trump fared, you know, and he wasn't, you know, Pence wasn't even trying to run against Donald Trump or run for Donald Trump's seat. So, you know, he almost ended up kind of advocating for him to be executed at the Capitol. I mean, this is not, so, you know, this is it's a hot seat there, the kind of the vice president of the GOP under Trump.
Matt, I did not have this in our pre-brief on this, but I feel like we've got to talk about it. The Democrats, we started out talking about Minnesota in this segment, and I think we should finish this on Minnesota because it is so important and will it matter. I think the Democratic potential candidates haven't really been out there as much on this question as I would have expected them to. And I, you know, we had to kind of search around a little bit to see what anybody had said, if anything, and maybe it's just so loud, like what's happening on the ground is so loud that you can't get it. But I haven't seen any of them fly to Minnesota, right? Like Kamala Harris hasn't gotten on an airplane from California and flown to Minneapolis and walked, you know, in a march. We haven't seen that from Buttigieg. We haven't seen that from, I mean, frankly, we haven't seen it from Gavin. We haven't seen it from any of them. And it just feels to me like it's a crisis that would cry out for some of these folks to stand with the American public that's outraged by what's happened.
It is outrageous. And I wonder, and I don't want to be kind of too cynically political about this, but I wonder if people think that it would be seen as too political to be showing up in some of these places. I also think it's a different kind of calculus for, you know, we've been talking, there's a lot of governors in this race. So like Josh Shapiro needs to stay home in Pennsylvania because ICE is showing up in Philadelphia. Like they've That's got right. stuff that they need to worry about. Westmore needs to That's worry right. about Maryland. But you know, like,
and there's been a snowstorm. So in fairness to the governors, they have been managing the biggest snowstorm of the last decade.
Yeah. So, and look, I think there's also kind of a need to like, I think it's probably going to help Tim Walz as governor of Minnesota for them to sort of pull back and stay away and sort of let him have the spotlight on this and on the response to this. But the only reason that I would say that they're not kind of actually showing up there is that it would just be seen as too political, too calculated. You know, everybody's had statements about it, which, you know, they sort of mirror each other, right? Because it's absolutely positively abhorrent and outrageous and completely and totally avoidable.
So the question, the outrage,
the outrage is kind of similar.
Yeah. The question on people's mind about this is, do we think that this, so Donald Trump is now pulling back. He's bringing out ICE agents. He sent Tom Homan in, who, by the way, is not like a great, warm, and fuzzy guy. you know, and pulled out Greg Movino. But the question I wonder, I think, is on the people's minds is, will this still matter 2 years from now? Is this a hinge point for the Trump presidency where now people are paying attention to the worst aspects of the Trump presidency in the way that they weren't, you know, 6 months ago?
I think that may be. I mean, yes, as you say, Tom Holman doesn't, you know, he doesn't dress like Hermann Göring. So, you know, that is like there's always that advantage to it. It does seem
and
like
if people haven't seen the Daily Show send up of this from yesterday, you really do have to watch Jon Stewart.
Yeah, you've got to. Yes. Yeah, and I think other than, you know, Democrats certainly are kind of have their position on this, which is pretty unified and pretty outraged. But you're now seeing Republicans kind of coming out against this. You've got it may have even been Spencer Cox talking about, like, you know, I mean, we're Republicans. We don't want to see federal agents descending upon our states. Mm-hmm. So this is definitely kind of a shift in moment. And this second death and the second murder is definitely moving things kind of away from Donald Trump and any support from ICE that he's got.
Yeah. And then if people believe ultimately that this big handed government that doesn't really have First Amendment rights, doesn't really have protection of your privacy anymore. You know, you no longer need a judicial warrant to enter people's homes, apparently, which is something that's a pretty big deal for, I mean, Americans, I would think. And now these guys, they made the cardinal sin of going after the Second Amendment, saying that if you showed up at a protest with a gun, concealed weapon, then that makes you automatically suspect, which is precisely not what the gun rights people have been saying for the last 40 years of conservatism.
Yeah, generally authoritarianism and libertarianism don't really mix particularly well. And so, you know, the libertarian wing of the Republican Party has got to be losing it at this point. And so that they're having, you know, there's real trouble. It's hard to support some of these Trump positions if you really are a believer in states' rights, if you really are a believer in personal freedom. So, and because he's violating all of it.
Violating all of it. All right. Well, we'll see if it matters. I think this may be a hinge moment. In the civil rights movement, there were these big moments, like when the little girls were killed in the Birmingham bombing in the church. That was kind of a big moment for civil rights. When Bloody Sunday happened, that was a big moment for voting rights. Stonewall, you know, obviously was a big moment for like LGBTQ rights. So there are these big moments that we don't really know until they happen. And but people are paying attention. And it may also be true, one, much like the civil rights movement, which was really a television. It was a movement built for a television era where people could watch these images on TV. And they literally sent kids into dangerous situations who were, you know, attacked by dogs to show people how brutal that system was, that this is the cell phone era. And people have been talking about this since 2020. If it weren't for cell phone video, we would not know what these authoritarian police officers were up to. And now we see it, and maybe people are paying attention to it, and maybe it will matter. I think for a while.
I think that's right. I think that's right.
Yeah. All right. Well, good to talk to you, Matt. It was a good
talk to you, Jamal.
Ciao, boys.
All right. Thanks. Bye-bye.